It's the Trupany Show with your host, James Trupany.
Hello and welcome to the Trupany Show. My name is James Trupany. This is my show, and today we are at Destruction in Kobe, as promised, with a little bit of Death by Dishonor in Las Vegas as well, for your listening perusal. And to join me to discuss these great and wondrous events is Miss Chelsea Spollen of ShoulderSup.net. How are you, Mom?
I'm doing okay. I have coffee, so everything is okay.
And we're not arguing about crisps.
They're called potato chips.
They're called crisps. That was a Twitter spat that we had this week between all of our friends, and why there is a shocking lack of prawn crocktail at a 7-Eleven. Anyway, today is Lincolnshire Day. It is my day. It is the day of my county. I am very happy about this. So I would just like to point that out because, you know, Lincolnshire gets no love from anyone anywhere. So I'm just saying, you know, it's Lincolnshire Day. Enjoy the podcast today. Well, we're recording it. When you listen to it tomorrow.
James's County. Yay. Yeah.
Tomorrow, it won't be Lincolnshire Day when you're listening to it. But today, whilst we're recording, it is Lincolnshire Day. Anyway, let us get on with some actual wrestling. And we're talking about Kobe, Destruction in Kobe, the end of the tour, the last match, last night of the Destruction tour. And it's been an interesting tour. There's been lots of stuff happening, but much like most years, Destruction tends to be a bit of a sandbox. It tends to be a bit of different stuff happening, different people challenging, trying to create some new stars or try and tread out some ideas maybe that will maybe work again in the future. But it is, as usual, the opening matches tended to be a bit more traditional. So we started off with a tag team match where Hiroi Kawato and Hiroshi Tenzan defeated Katsuyo Kitamura and Tomoyuki Oka in 5 minutes and 42 seconds. The two big heavyweights were wrestling against the veteran Tenzan and the young Fireplug Jr. Kawato. And Kawato and Tenzan took the victory in 5 minutes and 42 seconds. It was a fun match for what it was. There's not else you can say about it, really. But we moved on then to a 10-man tag team. A 10-man tag team match pitting Taguchi Japan, which was Jushin Thunder Liger, Ricochet, Reisuki Taguchi, coach there, Tiger Mask and on loan for GBH whilst he's got nothing better to do, Togi Makabe. They defeated the Suzuki Gun lineup of El Desperado, Taichi, Takamichi Noku, Takahashi Ayazuka, and Yoshinobu Kanemura in 7 minutes and 17 seconds in an alright match. It was fun. It was Suzuki Gun doing their Suzuki Gun thing. They do all seem a bit lost without their fearless leader, though. What did you think of this, Chelsea?
I thought this was a lot of fun. I'm a sucker for Taguchi Japan. I love those guys. Like, they always make me laugh. Everything they do is so silly. I like that some of the things that Taguchi does in every match, like, never work. And he always makes these great, like, oh, how did that happen? Expressions. And I liked seeing Suzuki Gun do stuff without Minoru Suzuki, because I feel like something that's good for any faction is for there to be well-established dynamics between the guys in that faction. Mm. Like, that always really helps me care. Like, I feel like that's part of why I love LIJ so much, is that I feel like I have a good understanding of some of the relationships between those guys. And so I feel like a match like this is an opportunity to do things like that. And I wish they had done a little bit more of it, but this wasn't meant to be anything earth shattering. It was meant to be kind of like a fun, silly match. And I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
It's funny what you say about that, because I mean, I think a large part of the appeal of those great factions of the 80s, like the Four Horsemen, was you knew those guys were doing what they said they were going to do, and they were out partying all night and hanging out with girls and drinking till dawn every night of the week. And you're right, that camaraderie does drive things forward. Same thing for the upper echelons of the NWO. I wasn't burning to figure out what, you know, Mike Rotunda and Scott Norton were doing on the weekends, but certainly, you know, what Kevin Nash and Scott Hall were doing as a pairing, because they were an entertaining group, gave them a certain appeal. And I think you're right, and especially trying to fill in those gaps with these guys a bit as well.
Yeah, and I mean, the nice thing about that too is, like, it just gives you more cards to play. It gives you more stuff that you can do down the line. You know, if you establish that there's two guys in the same faction that have some tension between each other, or two guys in the same faction who maybe they're best friends but they're super competitive over the same thing, you know, there's more stuff you can do, and can wait to do it. You can never do it, but it just leaves more options open.
Indeed. Speaking of which, Hiroki Goto and Yoshihashi of Chaos defeated Bullet Club, Bad Luck Farley and Chase Owens in 5 minutes and 41 seconds. Our friend Christy from Wrestling Sexism and New Japan GIFs is currently under a belief that the Goto-Yoshihashi love story, which is being documented by Tomohiro Ishii, is the next great bro love story in pro wrestling. And I think personally they're just building these two up for a run at the tag team titles, or certainly at the tag league later in the year. But I think it does kind of, like, you know, there is some nice shots that Ishii as film producer is something I'm looking forward to seeing, to be honest.
It'd be interesting, you know, like, New Japan is kind of subtle about how they do, like, love story stuff. Like, either they're really subtle about it or they're not subtle at all, you know, and they have, like, Hiromu pressing his forehead against Dragon Lee's and, like, making dreamy expressions. Like, I don't know, Goto and Yoshihashi, I could see it.
Yeah. And of course, Chase Owens being awesome, as always. I like Bad Luck Farley. I would like to say Bad Luck Farley's new head tattoo looked painful, to be honest.
Why does everybody hate Chase Owens? It's sort of the consensus online is that a lot of people really hate him. Is there something I missed?
I don't know. I love the guy. I think he's awesome. I think he works really, really hard, and I think he does a fantastic job. I think it is basically because... I guess because he feels like he looked out, and because he didn't come from, and I think, and this is going to sound really, really bad, but I think it's Northeast Coast elitism, because he didn't do the Ring of Honor thing, he didn't do the big name indie thing, he just happened to be really good at his job, and he came from a Southern promotion.
But everybody can't do everything the same way, or else wrestling would be really freaking boring to watch.
It would, yeah, it would, you know, I mean... we talk about, like, the British scene is fantastically varied and diverse at the moment, and it is. But 5 or 6 years ago, every card looked like a Ring of Honor card. And every card was five-star match, five-star match, five-star match. You know, or, well, everyone trying to have a five-star match, but it lost its effect. And it wasn't until people, like, brought characters forward who did interesting and different things. You know, a classic example is El Ligero, who gets a bigger pop now being a character wrestler in progress than he ever did being a pure straight wrestler, you know.
Yeah.
Not to say that he isn't a great pure straight wrestler, but, you know, it's one of those things. You've got to have people doing different things. You can't have everybody look the same. And Chase Owens doesn't look the same, doesn't act the same, and is still a very, very good wrestler and plays his role in Bullet Club better than most people do. And like we've said before, I think he's a better member of Bullet Club than Cody is for the role he plays.
I don't know if I like him better than Cody, but I like him better than Tama Tonga.
Yeah, there you go. So
I feel bad for saying that, too, because Tama's been there so long.
He's the only original Bullet Club member left, I guess, really. But, you know, I like Chase a lot, and I think Chase he's growing in this character. He's doing more stuff. He's got a bit more leeway now. He's a long-term. He's been there 3 years. And, yeah, I think I don't know why people dislike him. I think possibly because, you know, people still a bit marky about the fact he loses all the time, and it's like, well, so what, you know? So does, not being funny, but Desperado won about 2 matches before he got his title shot last month,
and he's really good. Anybody yeah. who thinks he's not really good is not watching what he does.
Taka Michinoku hasn't had a pinfall win since last Christmas in New Japan, I don't think. And the man's a living legend,
Taka Michinoku.
Yeah. So yeah, so it's just I just don't know. I don't get it. And I think it is elitism that he just didn't follow the route of, well, he hasn't done PWG, and he hasn't done Ring of Honor, and he hasn't done AEW or AIW, so he can't possibly be that good. And it's like, yes, he can. There's plenty of good stuff going on in the lower promotions in the southern United States that don't get as much play as those in bigger markets.
Yeah, that's, you know, a good call.
If you watch the NWA TV show that they used to release every week on YouTube, there's some pretty classy wrestling in front of big crowds. And, you know, and still a lot of that stuff goes on in the South. We just, on our chat group, I just posted, the Rock and Roll Express just posted a highlight reel in answer to Luke Gallows and,
Carl Anderson.
Carl Anderson, kind of challenging them for Starrcade, and they said, yep, yeah, we're ready for it. And there's 2 60-year-old guys doing Topicon Helos and Hurricane Ranas and having
is it really possible they're not going to put that on the network so we can watch it? I want to see that match.
Yeah, I would love to see that match, you know. Why the hell not? And they're good mates with the Hardys as well. You know, Rock and Roll Express, they were part of that TNA, the Final Deletion match, weren't they? So if the Hardys are good friends with them, and you know that Gallows and Anderson are, why not? Let's one have one match, just one. If you, especially if they don't put it on the network or they don't put it on TV, if it's just a house show, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
You know, so we'll see. I'm probably sure Vince is probably going to go like, what the hell are they playing at? But there you go. It's a house show. Let them do what they want.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, then, we move on to the next match, which was a singles match featuring Beretta, who defeated Yujiro Takahashi. It was Beretta's solo debut in the heavyweight division. It was given 3.5 stars from Meltzer. It was 13 minutes and 21 seconds long, and it was a lot of fun. And Yujiro kind of did his job to get Beretta over as a singles threat, and it was a well-told, old-school story of, this is my yard, stay out of my yard, no, I'm staying. And I thought it was really good. What do you think, Chelsea?
I really enjoyed this. I am excited for Beretta that he's getting this new platform to work on. I mean, like, I loved him working with Rocky. I was very sad when they had to part ways. But I also think that he's worked really hard and he deserves this. I have been impressed with him for a while, and I thought he was really great in this match. Like, his selling was awesome in this match. And he has that thing now, which I don't know if he had this when he was in WWE, where he can make really simple little things look cool and engaging. So like, he can throw a punch and I'm like, oh, there's something going on there, I'm interested, you know? And that's like the safest, easiest thing to do in wrestling, right? Like, if you can do things like that, where you can make like super safe, simple things look cool, then you can do anything. So I really enjoyed this. I also thought Yujiro Takahashi was great, although that's not a surprise. It wasn't anything like super earth shattering, but it was meant to be like a nice debut for Beretta, and I think that they accomplished that.
Yeah. Also noticeable, Don Callis not making sexist comments about Peter.
Thank God.
Yes.
Finally.
I think he's finally got the message. Thank the Lord.
Maybe we all tweeted him enough.
Yeah, in fact, he was very complimentary of young Peter there, who actually did a good job in this match. He was a bit more than eye candy in this particular match, and it worked pretty well. As Yujihiro's running of interference, and it's interesting what they're going to do with her, because Yujihiro's going to be there forever. He's a company guy. He's definitely going to have a job forever. But we have noticed that the models that have been at ringside, as soon as their part has grown big enough, they've parted ways with the company. And now she's getting good and has some stay online, has some presence. We wonder if she'll actually stay around, which would be unfortunate if she didn't, because I think she's quite good at what she does.
I think she's more charismatic than he is, too.
Yeah.
And I think they should keep her. I think they should find something interesting for her to do.
Yes, I think that would be good. Okay, then we move on next to the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team title match. Another three-way match, which was given 4 stars by Meltzer, which to me was gilding the lily a little bit. I didn't think this was as good as the other two matches, to be honest with you, that they've had on this tour. As our friend Strieger at Cage Match and of the Eastern Laurent on MLW, who said, what was the point in this match? Because War Machine had beaten Pillar Elite Squad in one match and pinned the Guerrillas of Destiny in the other match, so why are they having a third match? Which is a good point. Killer Elite Squad did look dominant in their win, and they had a bit of a come from behind victory, because at one point they were both laid out 8 miles away from the ring, and they managed to get back in the ring and take the championship. Not a big fan of these three-way matches, especially with big lumpy teams like this. It was all right. It did what it said, and I kind of appreciated the effort all the way through the tour, but if we could just go back to single two tag team matches, I'd be a lot happier. What do you think, Chelsea?
This is a good match for somebody, but just not for me. Unfortunately, like, neither of these teams do stuff that I personally get super invested in, and I feel really bad because War Machine in particular are, like, the nicest dudes ever in real life. Like, they're just... I guess not neither, like, all three. I'm sorry. I'm really tired. All three of these teams, like, I'm not super invested in any of them. I want to be.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can't get into it. War Machine are like the nicest dudes ever. Guerrillas of Destiny are always really nice to people on Twitter. Killer Elite Squad, I don't really know that much about them, and I don't care. I feel bad saying that.
Davey Boy Smith Jr. follows me on Twitter, and he's always a very nice bloke to me.
And that's great. And I like it when wrestlers are nice to their fans, and it makes me want to care about their work if I don't already. And sometimes I can get there, but this is just not my aesthetic, and I couldn't get into it, and I felt bad about that. I'm sure it's a great match for somebody who likes these styles. It's just, it wasn't my particular thing.
That's fair enough. I think Harry Smith or David Boy Smith Jr. was actually yesterday. He was teaching a submission class somewhere at a gym after going to see the Carl Gotch Memorial. If there's one guy who actually is built for Japan, it's David Boy Smith Jr. He loves Japan, loves Japanese food. When he isn't wrestling, he's doing grappling training somewhere else. He's a pretty accomplished grappling fighter as well. So yeah, I can understand what you're saying, though. It isn't necessarily everyone's cup of tea is these big lumpy matches, is it?
I mean, I know a lot of people who really like this stuff, and I think it's great that it's popular right now when I know so many people who get excited about it on Twitter, but it's just not my personal deal.
Fair enough. Right then, we move on to a special tag match which featured Hiroshi Tanahashi and Michael Elgin. They defeated Dave Finley and Kota Ibushi. Now, Tanahashi is going to have a match with Ibushi over the Intercontinental Championship at King of Pro Wrestling. Michael Elgin, former Intercontinental Champion, was they were kind of like loose end, nothing to do with these guys, so we'll stick them together in a tag match. But to be honest with you, Dave Finley did not look out of place in this tag match and was pulling his weight really, really well. It is a big of a jump up from where he's been before in random six-mans and five-mans. And he certainly looked like a star in this match, more so than in the others. So 12 minutes and 1 second, it was very, very good and kind of forwards the Tanahashi-Ibushi story. Where are they going to go with this? Ibushi was pretty popular in Kobe, but Tanahashi is obviously, he's still the ace. The go ace, as opposed to the ace. But it was well worth watching. And yeah, that title match in Kobe, and title match in King of Pro Wrestling should be really fun.
It looks like Ibushi and Tanahashi is a lot of fun every time it happens. And I'm excited to see where that goes.
Okay. We'll move then to the six-man tag match, which was three and a quarter stars by Dave Meltzer, rated as... It's an odd number, but there you go. And it featured Rocky Romero, Tomohiro Ishii, and Tori Yano as they defeated Los Ignorables de Japón, Bushi, Sanada, and Tetsuya Naito in 11 minutes and 56 seconds. The emphasis behind this match was Tomohiro Ishii and Tetsuya Naito, as Naito is defending his shot in the main event at Wrestle Kingdom against Tomohiro Ishii, and the chemistry they had in this match was just beautiful. The story they're trying to tell is that Ishii has Naito's number. He's beaten him 3 times this year. Yeah. People forget about that, but he has.
Naito hasn't forgotten about it.
No. Naito opened the match by spitting in Ishii's face, which, as you can imagine, went down well. And Ishii clobbered Naito every spot. He cheverishly got to cut him off. All of Naito's signature spots he couldn't get off because Ishii was one step ahead. And it really lays the foundation that Ishii really could upset Naito for this main event. And it sets up King of Pro Wrestling with another great singles match. What do you think of this one, Chelsea?
I think Ishii can get a really great match out of basically anybody. And when he has somebody who's as good as Naito, who can also not just, like, you know, handle all the wrestling components of it, but can also be, like, a really great character, it's just magic. Like, I'm really excited for the two of them to have more matches and do something together. And it's awesome when you see Naito, like, scared.
Yeah.
And, like, being vicious because he's scared, you know? Like, Naito is always a jerk to the people he's wrestling. But it's cool when you see the power so imbalanced there, where Naito may not be able to get the upper hand ever.
No.
That's really neat.
Yeah. Oh, shout out to Rocky Romero in this match as well, by the way. He was awesome because he did most of the legwork. Toriano did a lot of Toriano stuff and actually got some serious offense in for a change.
For once,
yeah. He went to the ring post to start with and he kept winding up Sanada, but it was about Ishii getting business done. And he absolutely clobbered Bushi with a clothesline towards the end of the match. In fact, Bushi was really good in this match as well, actually. He did a lot of the legwork for LIJ. So
his selling was awesome in this match. Like, I sometimes overlook Bushi, but he was really good here.
Yeah, definitely. Really, really good. And so was the next match, actually. Chaos, Kazuchika Okada and Will Ospreay defeated LIJ twice in two matches, because that's been against the rubber what's been happening lately in the G1 Climax Tour. It was LIJ who were largely on top in the multi-man tag matches. But yes, it was Kazuchika Okada and Will Ospreay against Evil and Hiromu Takahashi in 12 minutes and 39 seconds. Noticeably, with Will Ospreay getting the pinfall via Ozcutter, a move that was so impressive, Okada didn't even look. Wasn't bothering covering. It's over. 1, 2, 3. And it was really, really well done, this match. Obviously, Okada is selling the neck because he goes into the IWGP Heavyweight Championship match with Evil with a sore neck covered in athletic tape. And that was a selling point. Takahashi is going into something, we're not quite sure what, with Will Ospreay. And Takahashi had a really good match with Will, match up in this sequence. Him and Ospreay have such good chemistry together as well. I mean, they've been fooling around with the cat stuff on Twitter and things, and I think they've probably got told to calm down on the cat stuff because I don't think the Japanese fans get it. But
which I feel sad that they don't get it.
No.
Because it's so great.
But it was phenomenal, these two teams together were just absolutely perfect, because Okada and Ospreay have such good chemistry as a tag team. Evil and Takahashi work so well as a tag team, and it was just really, really good for 12 minutes and 39 seconds. Told the story, got people over, squared up the match results from the previous tour, so it looks even Stevens going into the main event, and Evil still looks like a threat to Okada. Even if he doesn't win the championship, he can do some damage so that Naito has an easy ride when it comes to Wrestle Kingdom, or that's the thought process.
Makes sense.
What did you think of did you see this match?
I did.
What do you think of this match?
I love Ospreay and Okada working together. You don't see that very often, and it's very interesting. Because I think of sort of like Ospreay sometimes seems like he's making room for Okada to be Okada and be like the top guy, you know? Uh-huh. And sometimes he seems like he's trying to challenge that authority a little tiny bit, where he's like, hey, I'm Will Ospreay. I'm established. I'm really, really good. I could challenge you maybe someday if I have to, you know?
Yeah.
It's subtle, but I feel like that dynamic is there and it's established well. And the fact that Okada sometimes just does that brilliant thing he does of just not caring, not, you know, where he's just like, yeah, I'm Okada. I have a stone face. It's fine. Whatever. Do what you need to do. Plays really well when the person he's working with is someone who can be as, like, expressive as Will Ospreay. Also, Ospreay and Hiromu is just magic whenever it happens. Like, it's fast and it's crisp and it's really, really fun. I thought this match wasn't, It wasn't anything super earth-shattering, but it wasn't supposed to be. It was just supposed to be, like, really enjoyable and to set up what they're going to do at King of Pro Wrestling. And I'm excited for Okada and Evil. I think that's going to be really, really good.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think it's Evil's, like, this is Evil's first chance at the IWGP Championship match. And he's not likely to win, because obviously the money match is going to be Naito Okada at Wrestle Kingdom. But you know, he's not going to like waste this opportunity. He's going to do something really, really special. And Okada is still Okada. He's still the number one male wrestler in the world. You know, there is no one who can touch him at the moment. Dave Meltzer got a tweet yesterday, which was hilarious in its inaccuracy, which said that, oh, there's plenty of people who are as good as Okada in the WWE. It's just that Okada can do what he likes and they can't. And it's like, no, but Okada doesn't do anything specifically dangerous or specifically different. If you look at his moveset, it's a pretty standard pro wrestler moveset. And if you put him in 1999, he wouldn't have looked that different. Or 1989, he wouldn't have looked that different. You know, it's just that his presence and everything is so good. He does everything so well. That's what makes him the best wrestler in the world. You know, his actual presence in the ring, his ability to tell a story and his selling, which is just God's gift to pro wrestling. You know, it's just absolutely awesome. So, yeah, certainly looking forward to King of Pro Wrestling with that match in the main event. But the main event of this card was for the IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship, and it was recommended by Dave Meltzer at 4.5 stars, 7.78 from the Cage Match users. Juice Robinson doesn't quite make it in his attempt at dethroning Kenny Omega. 32 minutes and 55 seconds, though, he gave him one hell of a fight, and it was one hell of a match to watch. The basic premise behind this was Kenny's coming back off knee surgery, and Juice wanted to be the sporting guy and try and out-wrestle him, but eventually he realized the only way he was going to do it was to go after the knee. And there were some tricky moves from Kenny to kind of distract him from that with some false knee selling to kind of get him to go after the knee, and eventually he did. But it made for one hell of a story to tell. I really, really enjoyed this match. It was really, really good. Maybe not Omega's best match of this year, but certainly up there. And Juice Robinson has come on so much since he debuted in the heavyweight division just under a year ago. Chelsea, what do you think of this?
I really enjoyed this. This might be my favorite thing on this card. I was so happy to see Kenny. And man, Kenny can sell. And not just like when he's in the ring, but like he walked to the ring. He did his entrance in such a way that it made you nervous if whether or not like he was healthy enough to have this match so soon after having knee surgery. And the fact that Kenny Omega can convey that without even really like saying anything is just so brilliant. He's so good, and I don't feel like a lot of people who talk about him understand that he's that good, because I think a lot of times people just think about like how silly he can be, you know, or how he's like, he's very charismatic. Well, it's not just that, it's also that he can really make you deeply believe what his character is supposed to be feeling and doing. I also really liked that they did that whole thing with, like you were saying, where Juice tried to be like a gentleman baby face, you know, and just like straight wrestle Kenny. And then he finally realized that that wasn't going to work, and he had to actually really use everything in his arsenal, and he still couldn't get the job done. I think they've built Juice really, really well. And I'm surprised by that, actually, because I wouldn't have thought before the G1 that Juice was the kind of guy that the Japanese audience would get super, super, super invested in long term. But I think they've really done a good job of helping him get there, because I mean, he got a lot of pops in this match, and I mean, we know how popular Omega is, so like the crowd was really invested in both of them. And it was nice to see a match where even though Juice lost, he didn't look any worse for losing. You know, like it was like, oh, well, he can't beat Omega, and Omega is so good. And it was such a good contest between the two of them. Like, it was Kenny just barely kicked out of Pulp Friction, which was, I screamed a little bit. Because I wasn't sure he was going to do it. For a second there, I was so into it. I was like, wait, what's going to happen? No way. And you know, I thought that they told the story so well that I wasn't sure who was going to win. And then I didn't think that it cost Juice anything to lose. I thought it just made him look really, really good that he did so well. And to be able to have that come across while Kenny is also, you know, selling that he's like injured is, frankly, I think really extraordinary. Like that's just some really good storytelling.
The only thing I didn't like about the finish was because Kenny kicked out Pulp Friction. I wouldn't say I didn't like it, but for a company that usually protects finishes so well, that kind of like grated a little bit. If they'd not bothered with that, he just had a chance to get it on, I think it would have been better. But it does mean kind of mean that Juice now has to go and find a new finisher to beat Kenny with, which I suppose, you know, I mean, our friend Cy Heath was suggesting that he didn't like Juice Robinson's finisher a couple of episodes ago when he was in the G1 climax. And maybe this is an opportunity to start with something fresh or try and find something. And it does send Juice on a journey. He's had 3 title matches this year. He's come up short in all of them. What's that extra element he needs to be able to be a champion? That's the next question for Juice. Kenny moves on. He's got a championship. He has a guaranteed match at Wrestle Kingdom if he keeps this title, which is likely because he's not going to defend it at King of Pro Wrestling. And that's the last big singles pay-per-view, I think, before Wrestle Kingdom. It's just beginning of October. It's the 2nd of October today as we're recording this, and we're already talking about January. You know, this is New Japan's slow period. They've got the tag league in December, so there's like 2 months of stuff bits of stuff happening, but not a lot of stuff happening. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where Kenny goes and what they do with Kenny between now and Wrestle Kingdom. He's going to be high up the card. I'm guessing he's going to have the second or third match from the end. It depends on what they do with the Intercontinental Championship. But we'll see, I guess. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with Juice Robinson as well, because I'm invested in that story now. I want to know what happens with him next.
It's such a good story, too, like, especially if you consider, again, that he just couldn't quite make it in NXT, where he did good work, but he couldn't make himself into a star, you know? I feel like seeing the moment when he finally gets his, you know, big shining, like, either he wins a title or he wins a really great match and he's just becomes, like, super, super, super over every time he does something. I feel like whatever that moment is for him, it's going to be really satisfying to see it.
Yeah, and it's worth waiting for that moment. You know, Kenny Omega had a year in the junior heavyweights. He wanted to be a heavyweight, but he was asked to start as a junior heavyweight to add some gravitas to the division, and he took his time, and he was much better for it, because when he came up to be leader of Bullet Club, he had a body of work for the New Japan fans to get their teeth into, and I think that's really important. You have to pay your dues in New Japan. You can just wander into the main event. I mean, AJ Styles did that. But for less well-known characters, you kind of have to build some momentum. You have to have something to lead you to places.
I sort of feel like maybe that's the problem with Cody right now.
Yeah.
Is that I don't know if Cody has the body of work to back up the other stuff that he brings to the table.
Yeah. Now, we'll speak about Cody in a moment or two, but we're going to switch from Kobe to Samstown. Samstown Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, for Death by Dishonor, which was a super show from Ring of Honor on the same day as NGPW Destruction in Kobe, it was the Friday before, which is the reason why we didn't have Minoru Suzuki in that multi-man tag, and we didn't have Kushida tagging with whoever to take on somebody. So it was a Ring of Honor TV title defense, first of all, for Kushida against Kenny Omega. Kenny King. And it was a very, very good match. It wasn't, I don't think, Kushida's best match this year, but Kenny King did an awful lot of very good work in it. Me and Chelsea were talking about this before. I wasn't a big fan of him in his Impact Wrestling run, which wasn't entirely his fault, because they didn't give him enough mic time to get over his character and get over the way he was working and what he was trying to do, plus a couple of high-profile botches, which made it to Botchamania, didn't really do him any favors either. So he kind of had a bit of a stilted run there in TNA, but he's gone back to Ring of Honor. He's cut out a lot of the high flying. He's gone back to being more of a mat worker, and I like him a lot better now than I did then. And certainly after this match with Kushida, I was very impressed with him. Kushida was fantastically good as well, as he normally is, but he lost the championship to Kenny King. Interestingly, Kenny King's daughter was front row ringside, and Kushida's mum was front row ringside as well.
Aww, that's nice.
Mrs. Kushida was there. She looked very happy to be there, as did Kenny's daughter as well. So, which was quite...
That's nice.
They kept doing it. At one point, Kushida... backdropped Kenny King. No, he STO'd Kenny King straight into the ring barrier just directly in front of his daughter, then got up and apologized to his daughter for what she did to his dad. Sorry.
That's classic.
But yeah, so it was a lot of fun, and it was a good match. It was well put together. And Kenny King goes on to be Ring of Honor TV champion, and it's been a good run from Kushida. He had those matches with Marty Scurll earlier in the summer. He defended against Marty Scurll again. And then, you know, he drops the title to Kenny King. He does have ambitions in Ring of Honor. He wants to be Ring of Honor world champion. He feels the Ring of Honor style suits him down to the ground, because he doesn't have to worry about being a heavyweight or a junior. He can just be a wrestler. It'll be interesting to see if he goes back there next summer for a similar kind of run, or even if he does get a run at the Ring of Honor World Championship, which I think would be a good thing, and it'd be interesting to see that happen.
I wonder if Kushida wants to go just because New Japan does a really bad job at finding stuff for him to do. when he had, I think, his first run with the title, am I thinking of that correctly? When he was champion the first time, he didn't get much to do. He was just kind of there And then Hiromu took over and they had that storyline and that was really, really good. And then they kind of cooled things off for him a little bit for no reason.
That was Kushida's third run with the title. He's had two more runs since before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I missed the first one entirely. So I don't get how they can have a guy like Kushida, who even Jushin Thunder Liger says is the best junior heavyweight in the world, and have so little for him to do most of the time. It just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, it's not like the guy is super injury prone or anything, right?
Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean, though, yeah. It just seems a bit odd, doesn't it, really?
And he seems like such a nice dude. Like, every interview I've ever seen with him, he just seems like a total sweetheart. I have a hard time believing that he's, you know, been a jerk to somebody backstage and royally pissed somebody off. I feel like maybe Ghetto and Jado just don't get his aesthetic.
When he gets good matches and he gets good feuds, you know, there is no doubt about that. But he's one of those guys who just seems to be... You're right. He's clearly the best guy they've got in the division. And he's got some great people to have matches with. And yeah, it doesn't seem... I think maybe there's not enough New Japan singles junior heavyweight matches to make it work, to seem like he's the top of the heap in one sense, because if you look at the heavyweight division, there's four titles in the heavyweight division, so there's always singles matches going on and rallying towards Okada for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. There's only one junior heavyweight title, and you maybe only get one junior heavyweight match on a card, and it may not be a title match. So how people perform in tag matches then becomes really, really important. But as the nature of the beast, like on this show, there was a lot of catch weight tag matches. You know, there was a lot of juniors and heavies working together. So that reduces the importance of the junior heavyweight championship as well. And so you're relying on Kushida as ace plus whomever to have an absolutely fantastic match to keep everything rolling forward, which is the reason why the Dynamite Kid and Tiger Mask left the company in 1985. You know, it was 85 when they left. So, you know, it's still the age-old problem of Kushida is no doubt a draw, and Kushida draws houses. You'd only have to look at the way the Best of Super Junior Finals has gone in recent years to understand that Kushida is well worth what they're paying him. But does he
necessarily... He's super over, too. Yeah. When he comes out, he gets a huge pop.
Does he necessarily, then, get the respect he deserves? Because even... He's not one of these guys like who can move up to heavyweight. If you look at like guys like Hiroki Goto, Tomohiro Ishii, they started as junior heavyweights, but they put on weight and they packed on muscle and became heavyweights. Kushida's only 5'9". He cannot do that. If he packed on muscle, it just wouldn't work. He wouldn't be able to do the things he can do. So it's difficult for me to see him where he goes, unless he has the big Liger run of 11 junior heavyweight championships, which is a possibility. And he's on four.
I mean, I want Kushida to have whatever he wants because he's great. And he's such a good baby face that whenever I see Kushida in pain, I feel terrible for him and angry at his opponent, even though his opponent is someone I really like. So, yeah, I would be thrilled if Kushida got a historic number of titles or something like that, you know. But when he's talking about wanting to go to Ring of Honor, that makes sense to me. Because when he comes to Ring of Honor, I feel like the Ring of Honor fans treat him like a star. And yeah. I don't know if he gets treated... I mean, he gets treated like a star by the fans in New Japan Pro, but I don't know if the company treats him like a star. And I feel like Ring of Honor probably is in a position where they have to because they want to maintain their relationship with New Japan Pro. So they're not gonna take one of those guys and then, you know, like do something that's gonna tarnish that relationship. So I don't know. I think it's a smart move. And I can think of I'm trying to think of guys in Ring of Honor who he could have really good matches with.
Most of them, to be honest. I'd like to see him and Jay Briscoe. That would be interesting. Complete clash of styles. Something completely different. You know, or even him and Colt Cabana having a series of matches where it's something where it's just different. It's not the same as what you get out of Ring of Honor. You know, purebred wrestler.
Colt would be funny too.
Yeah. You know, someone like Colt Cabana who could really have a great purebred wrestling, mat wrestling match with him. and do something different for Colt Cabana. You know, that would be really cool and interesting. But we'll see.
Oh my God, are him and Dalton.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that something different that Kushida's not going to cope with back in New Japan. You know, he's going to have Hiromu, he's going to have Will Ospreay, he's going to have Bushi, and he's going to have Desperado. And they're all very different people, but it's like it's the order of business for today, isn't it? Whereas if he goes to Ring of Honor, do something different with him. Give him something that he can sink his teeth into to have a proper North American style series with.
I could be into that. I don't know. I think if he does really well with the Ring of Honor fans, I feel like it could only enhance his star power in Japan.
Definitely.
Right?
Yeah, that's it. Because, you know, if it still works, you know. People read wrestling magazines in Japan. People read websites. People are always interested in what's going on in other places in the world. They were really the guys that really started it back in the 1950s, because otherwise there would have been no point for people like Lou Thesz and Billy Robinson and Carl Gotch to go there, because it would have just been another territory no one had heard of them in. So, you know, but Japanese fans have long memories and read an awful lot and figure things out for themselves. So, you know, it'd be very useful to him to have a big run in as Ring of Honor World Champion, or, you know, a run at the Ring of Honor World Champion, not necessarily the championship. But yeah, it'd be interesting, certainly.
Cool.
The other main event match involving New Japan guys from that card was the main event, where Ring of Honor World Champion Cody defeated Murder Dad Minoru Suzuki in a very entertaining match. And Suzuki was so over in this match. It was hilariously funny. It was really, really good. You had Cody. Brandy was there offering support to Cody in a rather fetching Stars and Stripes leotard thing. Like to point out, though, as I discovered this week, making clothing out of the Stars and Stripes is disrespectful and against the flag code. Did not know that.
Apparently. Who cares?
Well, this guy was pointing out the things that are actually disrespectful to the flag, according to the flag code. Kneeling isn't one of them.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also, I would argue that it should be in the Constitution that Brandi Rhodes can wear whatever she wants.
Also point out, you know what the actual prescribed way of getting rid of old Stars and Stripes flags is?
Is it to burn them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Incinerate
them. Makes sense.
Them.
I thought that was why people did it.
Yeah, there you go. You see? Yeah, it's not offensive. It's actually what you're supposed to do with them if they are worn out flags. Anyway, I digress. Minoru Suzuki, though, and Cody was fantastic. It was really, really good. Cody really trying to lay on this character of the American Nightmare, which is kind of like, I don't know how to put it. I couldn't know how to describe it. It's very cocky heel. Kind of like a traditional North American heel, much in the mold of Ric Flair, Nick Bockwinkle, that kind of style of champion. Brandi Rhodes doing a good job as manager for Cody in this particular match. And the pacing of this match, so slow it almost stood still, was just right up Suzuki's alley. Cody knew how to get the best out of Minoru Suzuki. They obviously figured this out really, really well. And Minoru Suzuki was as good as he always is, and you know he's always awesome, so that was really, really good. Kind of an odd ending, because he pulled the crossroads out of nowhere and then it just kind of finished. There was no real build to it, but the story basically was Suzuki had his number. He was all over him for the entire match, and Cody couldn't get out from under him. So when he pulled his finisher off, that was it was over with, and he got out the ring as fast as he possibly could before Suzuki came to and beat the shit out of him. He did get out of the ring fast enough, and then Suzuki found a ring boy to beat the shit out of. And the smile on his face when he found someone he could beat up was wonderful. So, Chelsea.
So, do you think that Cody is really, like, doing a good job getting himself over? Or not getting himself over, but, like, establishing that he deserves to be champion? Because I'm not so sure.
I think he's doing a good job with this character. Whether this character works for this day and age, I'm not so sure. If you see what I mean. The nuts and bolts of the match was perfectly good for what it was. Perfectly watchable and very entertaining, which you don't necessarily get in a Ring of Honor main event. A lot of the time, the Ring of Honor main events I've seen have been pure straight wrestling matches, because they should be, damn it. And there perhaps hasn't been enough entertainment to make things more interesting to a wider audience. So I'm kind of glad to see that. But Cody hasn't got the crispness of the rest of the roster. He isn't as he's better now than he was when he started, because he's kind of fitted into that mold of what a Ring of Honor wrestler is supposed to be. And I don't disagree with Ring of Honor signing him to a permanent contract. I think that's a smart move because he can only get better. But it's not necessarily gelling the way Cody is portraying it to be. And obviously, Cody has to portray it to be that it's working because he'd be stupid not to. But I don't think it's necessarily coming off the way it could do in the long term. And I think part of the trouble is Bullet Club, because as we've spoken before, he hasn't got a character that matches Bullet Club really well, or he hasn't redefined Bullet Club to match his character, which is maybe what he should have done. And not to be blunt, of all the guys in Bullet Club, Marty Scurll's a better wrestler than he is, the Bucks are better wrestlers than he is, Kenny Omega's a better wrestler than he is, and quite frankly, Tama Tonga, Tangaloa, Bad Luck Fale and Chase Owens and Yujiro are all better members of Bullet Club than he is, even if they aren't better wrestlers. And I'd argue a couple of them are just as good as he is. So, you know, he's not fitting. He's like a square peg in a round hole to an extent. Does that make sense? I think that's the issue for me.
It does make sense. The thing that's interesting is that of the guys in Bullet Club, to me, it seems like Cody is the only dude in Bullet Club on par with the Bucks in terms of ability to market himself and handle doing publicity really, really well. And I sort of, like, if I was just looking at the way he presented himself and not looking at any of the matches at all, I would think he was one of the biggest stars in the world. Like, he does such a great job every time he has an interview, every time he's got to talk on camera. Like, he's really, really good at that. And I don't know if... I kind of feel like maybe that's what Ring of Honor needs right now, because that was so sorely lacking for such a long time.
I think there's a big element of fake it till you make it with this going on, and I don't think that's a bad thing. If you portray yourself as a star and keep telling everyone that you're a star, eventually people will believe you, and there is nothing wrong with that. So, yeah, I think that's... I think I don't think it's a bad move, but I'm not quite... I mean, you're right, because you look at, you know, it was the Bullet Club invasion of Monday Night Raw this week, and Cody was in the forefront on a bullhorn doing his thing. And he was really, really good at it. You know, he did his thing. He rallied the troops the way you should do. And he knew what he was talking about to get that kind of thing over. I still don't think he fits Bullet Club quite. And I'm not sure what would make him fit Bullet Club more. You know, and it's difficult because you've got an awful lot of chiefs in Bullet Club at the minute. Whereas before, when Finn Balor or Fergal Devitt was in charge of Bullet Club, there was a delineation. He was the boss. Carl Anderson was backup, and Farley and Tango lower all the way down the line. And then when AJ took over, AJ was clearly the boss, and Anderson was his backup and all the way down the line. Whereas now you've got Omega, you've got Cody, you've got Marty Scurll, you've got the Bucks, and they're all kind of vying for your attention and who's actually in charge.
Right.
Which makes that feud with Tama Tonga and Kenny Omega so interesting, because you know, while there may not be an actual real tension, there is a possibility of that tension could appear, you know, and it makes sense to have that disagreement all the way through the G1 climax, because it made entertaining television. It was good, you know. Whereas now that you're out of that, Cody's like, you know, it's kind of the... I don't know. There's just something not quite fitting right with Cody and Bullet Club, and I don't quite can't quite put my finger on it. And I think you're right that kind of dominant championship look that he's looking for at the moment is the right thing of Ring of Honor, but I think Bullet Club's a distraction to that myself.
That's interesting. I wonder... I wonder how long they're going to keep him in Bullet Club, because it sounds like when the Bucks talk about him, and again, this could be fake it till you make it, it sounds... like, the Bucks love having him in Bullet Club. And it actually sounds like Kenny does, too, although Kenny is quieter about it. You know, I wonder about that. I wonder if maybe they're going to eventually, like, have to exploit that tension and try to turn it into a feud, or what's going to happen there.
Personal issues make money. So,
yeah,
Jerry Jarrett was right then, and he's right now. So we'll see what happens. Oh, I wish Jerry Jarrett would do a podcast. That would be awesome, wouldn't it? I'm not sure he ever has done, but there you go.
It would be awesome, but also I think some people would get some things said about them that they wouldn't like.
Anywho, we've pretty much wrapped up the two main events there. The next thing is what's going to happen next, which is King of Pro Wrestling, which is in the middle of October, being a couple of weeks, so we'll be talking about that soon. Anything you're particularly looking forward to there, Chelsea?
Well, I'm excited for, because aren't Ishii and Naito going to have a singles match?
Yeah, that's over the main event at Wrestle Kingdom contract, the IWGP Heavyweight Championship match.
That's going to be fun. And also Okada and Evil, that's going to be fun.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to that the most, I think. I think they signed another three-way tag match, which I'm not looking forward to because I've seen it three times already. But, you know, give it one more run, I guess. I'm not, because, you know, we've been talking a lot about how long War Machine are for this New Japan world, because there is rumors that there is a Stanford organization that are very interested in them, so they could end up in Florida fairly soon. So I'm not sure this might be them get the most out of War Machine whilst they're still available kind of deal, I suppose.
A Stanford organization. I like that.
Let's be honest, they'll probably end up in Florida first, I would think. But having said that, do WWE need tag teams at the moment?
Well, SmackDown right now, the tag team scene is the Usos and New Day, and that's pretty much it. And it's great. Like, don't get me wrong, it's awesome. Raw, the tag team scene is the Hardys, where Jeff Hardy is out, so they're kind of on the back burner for right now. Sheamus and Cesaro, who are excellent. Dean and Seth, which is its own screwball romantic comedy all by itself. It would be good, but I would rather see them in NXT than on the main roster. The problem is in NXT, they have so many guys right now. Like, trying to put together a takeover card with all the guys they have now is already probably a challenge because there's so many people who seem to be deserving who have to get cut out. And also, I'm still waiting for them to give the women more time. When am I not waiting for that? Like, there's room for them, but I also don't know that I think it's a pressing need.
Fair enough. Okay, then. What else is there on this card? Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything else. There's the play out of the Hiromu Will Ospreay Kushida angle, which we don't really know. Don't think anything's been announced for that yet, has it?
They should do like a photo shoot to promote that and just have them all like wear like really, really nice preppy clothes and take a bunch of pictures where they're just like smoldering into the camera, you know. I think I'd be more excited about that than the match itself.
Fair enough.
That's my personal taste.
Fair enough, yeah. I'm not sure I want to see it, but yeah. Keep you happy.
It's That's not really for you, James.
It's not, no. Not everything is for me.
It's got Bullet Club, so Bad Luck Fale, Leo Tonga, Yujiro Takahashi versus LIJ, which is Bushi, Hiromu, and Sonata.
Okay.
Which sounds fun. Like it'll be good, but probably not a huge spectacle. Chaos, which is Hiroki Goto and Toru Yano versus Suzuki-Gun, which is going to be Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. That's going to be fun.
That's going to be fantastic.
It's funny how just adding Zack Sabre Jr. to something makes me go, oh, yeah, perk up my ears.
Same for Toru Yano for me, really.
Yes. He's your favorite. Man, have we seen Zack Sabre Jr. and Goto? Did they have a match in the G1? I can't even remember.
We have seen them two together, and they are very, very good together. They do work well together.
Yeah. I was going to say, my gut feeling is, I can't recall seeing that, but it sounds like it would be awesome. Funky Future, so Ricochet and Taguchi versus Roppongi 3K?
Yeah, that's Rocky Romero's new tag team, which he hasn't said much about because he's the smart coach of Chaos and he wants to bring Taguchi Japan a surprise at King of Pro Wrestling.
Is it going to be Chuck Taylor?
I have no idea.
That would be the most hilarious. I'm not saying it should be, but that would be hilarious. Killer Elite Squads, so Davey Boy Smith Jr. and Lance Archer versus Gorillas of Destiny, so Tama Tonga and Tagaloa versus War Machine. Again, we talked about that. Bullet Club, so Cody, Kenny, and Marty versus Chaos, Beretta, Jado, and Yoshihashi.
That sounds like fun. I'm quite looking forward to that.
That actually, yeah, you know, especially like Trent Beretta's really stepped up, so that should be interesting.
Definitely.
I'm into that. And then Kushida versus Will Ospreay, which I love every time they do that. It's there are parts of that match that are the same every time, but I don't even care because they're good. They're good things. I'll watch them. Hiroshi Tanahashi and Togi Makabe versus Juice Robinson and Kota Ibushi. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of fun.
Anytime Tana and Ibushi get to fight, that's always a good time. Naito versus Ishii, that's going to steal the show.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's probably the one most people are looking forward to, apart from the main event.
Yep, and then Okada versus Evil, which we're all really excited about that, because we don't know what's going to happen.
No. It's going to be interesting. Though I've got a feeling that Okada will win the championship. I don't think they're going to let Evil run to the Wrestle Kingdom with it. So I don't think there's an opportunity to get it back. And usually after King of Pro Wrestling, they shut down championship matches to concentrate on the tag league. So, and to obviously to give you the 2 months run up to Wrestle Kingdom to promote it as much as they possibly can. So we will definitely know. And of course, Okada will take Shinya Hashimoto's all times IWGP Heavyweight Championship defense record if he defeats Evil at King of Pro Wrestling.
Wow, how many defenses is that?
I think that's 11. And in Japan, for those of you who don't know, it's not the days of the title reign, it's the number of title defenses that's important. That's the way they rank your champions. So I think Yuji Nagata had 11 defenses, and I think Hashimoto's had 14 defenses in total, I think. So it's about that length.
Whereas in WWE, they rank them by the number of days.
Yeah.
And you can have a champion who has the title and doesn't defend it at all.
Yes.
Much to the chagrin of your audience.
But then again, you think about it, there's only an IWGP Heavyweight Championship match maybe 7 times out of 12 months. So, you know, they space these championships out. Plus, you have 3 really important championships and the never open weight. So I suppose it's 4 that's capable of headlining as well. So, I don't know. We shall see. It should be interesting and fun, this event, King of Pro Wrestling, as it usually is.
It's a card packed with some quality stuff.
Definitely. So we'll call it for today. Thank you very much for listening to the Wrestle Talk Podcast Network. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and wherever you get your podcasts from. I'd like to thank my guest today. That's Chelsea Spollen of ShouldersUp.net.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure to have you. We can talk about crisps more later on Twitter. And you can follow her at Chelsea Comics and at Shoulders_Up, where she tweets an awful lot about pro wrestling. You can find me at Sheriff Lone Star, also on Twitter. For now, take care, and we'll be back next week with more from the Beginner's Guide to Japan, where we've moved on to 1993. Bye!